The winner of the Best Burger in Michigan by MLive in 2020 is also one of Michigan's best-kept secrets as a brewery. Albion Malibu in Albion, Michigan has been turning amazing food and drinks for the past 5 or so years and presents their take on Belgian-style beers. Ben sits down with us to discuss the genesis of the brewery, we review a few of their beers, and talk about what the future can hold for this small-town brewery. We've said it a few times on the show, make sure you have a reservation or go early as this brewery fills up fast every day.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Us in our studio, we have Ben from Albion Malibu. How you doing today? Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do over at the brewery?
Sure. I'm Ben. Happy to be with you guys. Thanks for having me. I am co-owner and officially chief brewing officer is my title, but that always sounds weird. So co-owner will do, and I brew.
And how long have you guys been open for?
I've been since May in 2018. So we're coming into our fifth year here.
And have you been the brewer, the head brewer, the chief brewer the whole time? Have you worked with somebody else? Is this what's the layout for the brewing process over there?
Yeah, I've been the only brewer for most of it. I've had a couple of assistants along the way. One an intern that moved on to go to slide over and work for Jolly Pumpkin North Peak once he kind of got his bearings and moved closer your direction, I guess. And then currently Nick is doing some brew house assistant as well. But yeah, the brewery was kind of the beer side was kind of my baby. It was a home brewer for probably 10, 12 years and kind of got serious about scaling up and met the right people at the right time to make it happen and haven't looked back.
Now, you mentioned being a home brewer. What was the first thing that you home brewed, the first style? Was it a Mr. Beer Kit?
It wasn't a Mr. Beer Kit, but it was pretty close. I've always been a little bit of a do-it-yourselfer, and I've always been a home cook, so I always lived off a recipe book. So I went out and got some generic homebrew instruction book. It wasn't one of the big ones that I come to know later by, you know, Papazian or How to Brew by John Palmer. It was some off the shelf generic book. I brewed a brown ale because that was many of our introductions back in about the late 90s, early 2000s to craft beer. And it was really bad. I made it.
But, was it Newcastle that was your introduction to brown?
Actually, Pete's Wicked was a big craft beer introduction to me, and then I don't remember what the other brown one was that I drank a little more of. But I actually lived in Battle Creek right after college. Only a few blocks from the original Arcadia site. So that was kind of I'd just started drinking beer a little bit, but it was, you know, what I thought was more of the upscale beer. It was, you know, Killian's and Labatt's at that point in time. And Arcadia was kind of my first introduction to like true craft beer. And again, I'm not really sure I liked most of that very much, but I was a scientist and a nerd and working in, pharmaceutical fermentation processes and was kind of more interested in the process than I was the product initially. But that was kind of the gateway.
What came first, the brewing or the pharmaceutical schooling?
So I was a bio major, but that wasn't really the direction I intended to go. I kind of landed and what I thought was going to be a part-time job that lasted 18 years in pharma. While I was sort of making my plans for grad school and what I was going to do next. And apparently what I was going to do next was going to be opening a brewery. So it just took me a little long to figure that out.
Did you have to maintain that original job while you opened up your brewery, or were you lucky enough to be able to kind of go full force into brewing and just brewing?
I was very fortunate, actually. Kind of lightning sort of struck when all this happened. I had been at the company I was at for almost 15 years. I was doing a lot of work in their quality control process as they scaled up to a larger facility. And the way all this lined up is I came up with a business plan. I kind of hoped to move out and start doing the beer thing full time. And the scaled up facility got approval right around the same time. And they were going to be able to make about 10 times the product per run with about a third of the number of people. So they were heading into a massive layoff. And the company, to their credit, I think handled it very professionally. And the first thing they did was said, you know, all you guys that have been here through all of this, you know, anybody that wants to volunteer, we'll put together a very generous severance package. So I was able to step away and continue to draw a salary for a while we were under construction and really got this booted up. So, well, fortunate timing.
For sure. What was the first, you know, you obviously go into this brewery and we'll kind of get into the styles that you chose, but what was that first lineup of beer that you had when you launched Albion?
So when the doors opened, we had about five or six beers on tap. We had a Saison that we just called Batch One. It was actually meant to be a beer that we do annually called Noisy King. It was an oak aged Saison, but I wasn't really happy with exactly how the first run went, and I didn't want to spend the money on the oak spires and the time to tie it up. So I released it as a straight Saison. We did have American Molder, which you're drinking, the porter. That was one of our launch beers. That was one of my home brews that I sort of dialed in. We had Uncle Cousin, the IPA that we still brew to this day. That's our kind of more traditional West Coast IPA. We had Redheaded Senator, which we've tweaked over the years. We just released a new version of that it was actually December 2nd because we had a big event around it. That's a big double red IPA, 10.1% ABV this year. And then we had kind of a blonde-ish beer at the time that I was kind of dabbling my toes into more traditional Belgians without hoping I was not scaring off the locals who were new to craft beer by going too weird right out the gate. So I was a little tepid with that style to start with. But I had sort of a session blonde on at open.
Now you mentioned the American Molder, which is what I'm drinking. Talk to me about this beer and kind of explain what I'm tasting, what I'm getting out of this. Maybe, you know, are there any comparables to some bigger porter? Isn't really necessarily a large distro style, but what am I getting when I drink this beer?
So I really, when I did get into craft beer proper, dark beers were sort of my first love. Porters and stouts, I think, are a lot of people's gateway, you know, to something with more flavor. And I absolutely fell in love with Founders Porter. I think they have an absolutely killer porter to this day. I think they do a really great job with it. The beer that is now American Molder started once upon a time as an attempted homebrew clone of Founders. And then as these things happen, just like any cook over time, kind of tweaks their recipes and decides what they like. I began to use more and more Belgian yeast strains. So all of our beers, by and large, have a Belgian yeast strain. I think the Kolsch might actually be the only exception to the traditional Belgian yeast that we use. So there's definitely a little bit of a different twist with the Belgian yeast strain. And I added a fair amount of rolled oats to it over time to try to build up the mouthfeel and give it a little bit more body to sort of offset the high attenuation of a Belgian yeast so that it wasn't just a super thin Belgian-y kind of a taste to it. And then through a little bit of trial and error and changing hop profile, because it's a fairly high IBU for a porter. I want to say that thing clocks in around 50 IBUs or so, if I remember correctly off the top of my head, which is fairly bitter for, you know, a less than 6% ABV robust porter. I begin to use a local hop grower's nugget. They're only a couple miles from the brewery. They harvest it at a great time. It doesn't have quite the intense earthiness of some of the nugget hops that I've used. And I always get a little bit of a slight, almost peach aromatic off it that I think is just really, really nice. I actually use it in our IPA as well in a lower dose, but it's exclusively the hop I use now in that beer. And our local grower is the only nugget I've used in American Molder now for the majority of our existence.
Well, speaking of Belgians, let's talk about the Iron Lion series, because I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan.
I'm really happy to hear that. I have been a big fan of Belgian beers for a long time. As we got closer and closer to opening, we started to fall into a little bit of a trap that I think a lot of people do when they're going down business, is you really start to think of like, what's going to sell? What do people want? What do we have to do? What are the boxes we have to check in order for us to be a Michigan brewery? And I kind of had this draft beer menu in the business plan that by the time we were ordering equipment, I almost wasn't excited about it anymore. I was like, I don't really want to do this. Like, I don't really feel like the creative side of me and the things that I really, really was passionate about were kind of, on the back burner. And I finally went back to my partners and was like, you know what? Like, this is where my passion in brewing is. I love the Belgian yeasts. I think yeast in general has, at that point in time, especially, was a very underutilized ingredient in American craft beers. There's so much focus on hops. And then you have the malt profiles of the darker beers. But there's such a wide range of flavors you can get from yeast with different attenuations, different temperatures, different strains. And it really wasn't being messed with very much in the American craft beer that I saw. Some of the Belgian breweries or Belgian-inspired breweries that I really love, like Brewery Vivant up in Grand Rapids, Stormcloud, they were doing some really, really neat things. And I kind of was becoming more and more sure that that's the direction that I wanted to lead. My partners were very skeptical about whether that would stick. We're in a small town here in Albion. There was no brewery before us, and we were going to be introducing a lot of things to them, to the local clientele. And we weren't really sure if something that was outside of what we considered the craft beer mainstream was really going to resonate. But I kind of rewrote what I wanted to do. I brewed a few homebrew batches and put it in front of my partners. And I think when they tasted the things that I really was passionate about, they kind of lit up and was like, yeah, this is, you're onto something, and let's go for it and see what happens. Kind of, as I mentioned, with our opening lineup, we were still a little cautious out of the gate. It helped the Saison style helps that I won a gold medal in a homebrew competition. Out around Detroit pre-open. I think that really helped sell it to my partners that was something that we could do well. So we did start with the Saison, but the more traditional, blonde, double, triple, quad, we kind of held off for a little while until we kind of got our bearings. And I think I finally introduced the blonde probably a year and a half after we opened. I did it for the first time. And I decided to do it as a series to go ahead and do a run through, the full lineup of the popular four styles, in part for yeast management, yeast utilization, right? I was going to invest in getting the yeast in, getting these ingredients in. We were going to see how it went. And the blonde from the first time we did it almost overnight became one of our best sellers, and people really gravitated to it, really liked it. My partner Charles day one said, "This is my favorite beer you've done." And I think it's been his primary go-to since then. Kind of leaning into that, seeing the customer feedback, and then having that culminate with, we took home a silver medal at GABF, in 21 for French style or Belgian style ale with the Iron Lion Blonde. It's the first GABF we've ever entered. That was super rewarding and sort of was a great validation of all of that energy you put into kind of going down this direction.
So what is, I'm guessing then that might be your favorite kind of style to brew. What is your favorite style to brew?
I think like a lot of brewers, it's probably the next one I'm brewing. I gotta say that almost 5 years in, it hasn't gotten old. I've never gotten up on a brew day and felt like I'm dragging myself to work and I don't want to do this. It's always something I enjoy doing. But yeah, the exploration process of sort of trying new ingredients and coming up with a new recipe. Obviously, we can't do that a lot with the tap list. You have a number of things that either have to be maintained or that you're rotating through seasonally. But it never stops the wheels from turning of, you know, how can we do this a little bit better? How can we, you know, what's the next new beer that we're going to be able to play with and finally pull the trigger on once we've thought about it for so long that it's hatched into something real, and see how close to whatever we imagine we can produce and bring to life. I think that's just a really fun process.
So what are the things that inspire you to make a new beer?
I think that depends. Sometimes it's a style. You know, one of the ones we have on full time now is Sneak Attack Vacation, which is our beer de garde. And I think there were so few examples that I could get my hands on to know what that style was about. And doing sort of French and Belgian style ales, you know, I see reference to it in all the literature, but I can't even go to my local bottle shop and find a beer de garde out of thousands of examples. So that one was really inspired more by, you know, let's see if I can take all the descriptions, everything I've read and the very small selection I get, and see if I can create something that's what I think is being described to me that would be a good example of it. Sometimes it's pop culture. It's a song, it's a movie, it's a show. It's often flavors. As I said before, I'm a pretty avid home cook as well. And I love to go out to great places to eat. So discovering flavors that work well together or combinations. We did a sour last year called Good God Lemon, that kind of came to life just after limoncello one evening out. It's like this has such a great sort of like creamy, lemony tartness that, you know, how can we translate that into a beer to make something that really tastes like lemon and not just like lemon juice, you know, not just sour. And so I think it just kind of depends on what comes together. But I love traveling around the world. I love looking for new things that are out there. And when I get a chance to taste or experience something new, you know, that really gets the wheels turning. How can I share this with people in our tap room?
That's awesome. Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've mentioned the sours and the farmhouse saison so far. Are you doing open fermentation right now with either of those? Or I guess with the saisons?
No, we do. I mean, we have traditional fermenters and everything. The saisons even are, we use a traditional, you know, wet yeast that we buy. I get all my yeast from Omega out of Chicago. They're a fantastic company that grows up lots of really interesting strains. But the big difference with the fermentation and on my side is more temp control and how we manage those yeasts. Saisons are basically, for me, I will pitch one and hold it at about, you know, 70 degrees for 24 hours or so through the initial growth stage. And as soon as it's rocking and rolling, I just turn the glycol off and let them rip and see how warm they get and get them highly attenuated and let all those phenolics come through as best they can.
Now, I'm glad you actually mentioned Omega. We actually had them on the show a few months ago back in August. And with your education, it's actually the very first thing I thought about. Is something like the yeast industry something you've ever thought about doing? Because, you know, people like Lance from Omega, he had the similar type of background that you have and went and created a yeast lab with what you're using here today. Has it ever been in your interest, I should say, or something you've thought of?
I think, like a lot of business owners, I think there's an entrepreneurial spirit that runs through us. So when we were opening, I mean, we threw everything against the wall, and that was definitely one of the things I pitched of, you know, what we should really get into, no pun intended there. we should really get into, you know, managing our own yeast, and maybe we could, you know, do slants and stock them for other places and we can grow this up into a lab. And yeah, the realities of how busy you are with a single idea at a time, once it gets off the ground, hit home pretty fast. And I was grateful to find, you know, somebody as close as they are that does as good a job as they do. I think Omega just does an absolutely fantastic job. I cannot speak highly of them enough as a supplier. They've always been super reliable, and I'm always been thrilled with their product.
Yeah, that's awesome. He really is great. That whole business really does good for both homebrewers and the commercial side. Speaking of the business, talk to us a little bit about that. You're in Albion. Albion's a really small town. What was it like opening a brewery there?
Well, to start with, it was never an option to do it anywhere else. I was born and raised here, and it was a passion of mine for a long time, and I wrestled with the same thing. Like, you know, can we make this work in a town this size? How are we ever going to be successful and do it right in a town this size? Before we opened, there was sort of some local signs on the wall that things were getting better in this area. We're an industrial city. You know, we had our boom back in the, you know, post-industrial age with a lot of steelwork, a lot of foundries. Albion Malleable Iron was our namesake and inspiration, was the largest employer in the city for 100 years. They employed 1,000 or more people at their peak in a town of 10,000. So, you know, it really is what the city was built on. But things had gotten pretty kind of hit rock bottom probably in my lifetime here in the town, in terms of the number of places that left. You know, our school district was closed and annexed by a neighboring district. We lost our hospital. We lost, most of our large employers. And Albion College was kind of the one big one really left here, and a handful of factories that with modern efficiencies employed very few people for the amount of output they had, right? They're highly automated. But about probably 8-10 years ago, we started seeing some activity. The local movie theater got a huge grant, had an absolutely gorgeous restoration back to its original condition. Essentially, I think $4.5 million dumped into this theater to renovate it. One of the whole blocks of downtown that was dilapidated and condemned was purchased and leveled, and a Courtyard Marriott hotel was put in. And a lot of the stuff was starting about the same time that we started having these conversations. And my partner, Charles, who was a physics professor at the college, he was really big on the food side and kind of was doing a restaurant pitch and was basically saying, I want to be a part of this revitalization. We want to help the community come back. We want it to do something really cool here in the city. And when we met and sort of talked about the idea of a restaurant brewery, it was clear that we were, you know, very much aligned in terms of our vision and what we wanted it to be. And, you know, I think in terms of making it work in a smaller location, we kind of realized we're close to everything, right? We're right on 984. We're in a small town, but we're 20 minutes away from Jackson or Battle Creek or, you know, Olivet. We're half an hour, 40 minutes away from Coldwater and some of the areas around the south. And within an hour of us, we have Kalamazoo and Ann Arbor and Lansing. And, you know, we're kind of in a centralized location where we can draw from. But to do that, we had to do it right. So we kind of started out with this mantra that we went out to investors, and a lot of people that were skeptical and a lot of people that said, you know, you should start with something a little smaller, just like, let's see if it works. And we're like, we can't do that being where we are. We have to make something that people are going to be willing to drive to and come to and enjoy. So we either got to go for it 100% and be confident in our product, or we can't get this off the ground. So I'm still to this day kind of astounded that we did get it off the ground, that we got enough people to buy in. We got a really fantastic local bank that was willing to, you know, take a really big gamble on us to help bridge the difference. And yeah, it's been our clientele week over week is, we have a huge percentage of new customers every single weekend. And we get a lot of return customers that drive an hour or more to come to us because they love what we're doing.
I love that. See, where I'm here in Arizona, there's a lot of small town breweries, similar sizes or even smaller than what you're in, working in. One phenomenon I've noticed with those, and I don't know if it's the case there, so I'm curious. For example, the one I'm thinking about I go to all the time opens at 3:00. The first time I showed up there at about 3:15, I'm like, oh, there'll be no one there. Reality was every table and every seat was full because, you know, small town, it's not a lot of other options. Do you have that kind of case where people come to you because, you know, you're the only brewery, so they're kind of flocking in immediately, or what's that like there?
Well, I mean, I think there's some of that. But again, like, you know, with a centralized location, you know, I mean, people are typically pretty willing to drive 20 minutes to go to a brewery, right? So yeah, we're the only brewery in Albion, but within a 20 mile radius, you can also go to, you know, Dark Horse, Roke, Grand River, Iron Bark, now Ogma and Jackson, Territorial and Battle Creek, Hand Map and Battle Creek. I mean, you got a lot of options with a 20 minute drive around us. And I mean, it's to the point where, you know, even if you were in a bigger city like Grand Rapids, you might be driving just as far to get to the number of breweries that they got in a similar area, or at least be spending as much time in a car. I think what really was the icing on the cake for us is our food. We set up with the same mentality on the food side that we did with the beer side. We wanted it to be something that people would turn out for. And, you know, once people come in and kind of ate and enjoy the what we're doing, we're really on the map statewide as a restaurant destination at this point. And that really drives our traffic big time. So
was that the plan originally, to have the food at that level along with beer?
No, one thing that I wasn't necessarily on the same page with my partner on when we met was the food side. I had ideas of what I wanted to do. Kind of as a home cook, I was very Asian inspired. I'd spent a little bit of time in India. I love Indian curries and Indian cooking. I kind of wanted to do sort of a fusion kind of thing that was a little different. And he's like, "Oh, we're gonna do burgers and wings," and I'm like, "This is so generic. Like, why would you ever want to do this?" And he's like, "But we're gonna do the best burger and the best wings you've ever had anywhere." And I was like, "All right, it's still a lot of hyperbole, you know, whatever." And then we got together and he cooked some smash burgers with that he had worked on for about 2 years to dial in his exact blend of meats that he was grinding himself. He had a sauce that he had worked up that was sort of a signature. It's now our signature sauce, which I swear to God, people would drink the stuff out of straws if we let them. And he made just simple, true buffalo wings with a hand, you know, a sauce that he had made. And it was all just spectacular. And again, I guess, you know, proof is in the pudding. When 2020, the MLive Michigan's Best named us best burger in the state of Michigan, that transformed our business overnight. it kind of validated the whole approach. But he definitely swayed me with what he was thinking at that point, realizing that even though he was talking more traditional sort of pub offerings, he wanted to do it in a way that people weren't used to. He wanted to avoid frozen products. And as we've grown, and thanks in part to the award and the attraction that's given us, we were able to hire a baker on staff. So our buns and breads are all baked in house, our meat's ground in house, the fries are all punched and blanched and dropped in house. Salad dressings are made in house, or desserts are in house. I mean, there's very few things that we buy prepared, you know, ketchup and mayo that we're not making on our own. But we really are a from scratch kitchen. And, you know, we get people that come in and they will have their sandwich, they'll have their food, and they'll tell us, like, "This is some of the best I've ever had. And I don't understand why it's so much better than the last burger I had." And I think it just comes down to doing real cooking and not relying on these frozen prepackaged products, and a lot of people just aren't used to that.
Yeah, a lot of breweries, unfortunately, I don't think understand that. The food can make or break it as far as that goes. I'm probably not going to go to a brewery again where they're giving me Tostitos chips and the fake cheese if I order some nachos. That's a definite. One final question here for you before I pass it on. Who makes the peanut butter pie?
That is also our baker. You know, I a lot of people will say this, I guess, about their employees, but I truly believe we have one of the best bakers in the state of Michigan. Pat Delaney, he has baked for, if you name a big one in the state, he has been there and spent time there. He baked for Zingerman's, he baked for Schuller's. When we met him, he was the baker for the Dark Horse Commons when they had the bakery there. We began buying buns from them, and we just loved them more than anything else that we had ever tried or sampled. Through the transition, you know, to Roke and changes that happened there, he left the Dark Horse. He went on to a more commercial job for a little while, and we basically pursued him and said, you know, if you ever want to come back to doing this, would love to find a spot for you. You know, what was that?
Well done.
we had many conversations. We kept up a relationship, and once that burger award hit, we were forced to actually lease a second kitchen. We could not keep up with the amount of prep that we were doing for our restaurant in the building that we had built. We had this very small galley kitchen because our thought pre-open was we're a brewery and we're going to do a few, you know, salty foods that are going to keep people drinking and sitting in their seats while they have a few beers. And overnight we were a restaurant that was on the radar all over the state that also happened to make their own beer. So it literally doubled our revenue, overnight. We were holding on for dear life. Charles was driving his truck around the state to Sam's Club, buying briskets and chunks of sirloin that we could grind into burger because we blew through everything that our suppliers could get to us on short notice. And we got Pat back on the phone and said, now that we're leasing a kitchen and we have a couple of ovens that could be used, you know, would you really consider coming and baking for us? And thank God he said yes. And he's been with us for about 2 years now. And yeah, he's just fantastic. His desserts are incredible. He makes the best creme brulee I've ever had anywhere. The peanut butter pie is amazing. And all of our breads are all baked here by him. So he's a real asset to the business.
All right, Nick, you had some questions?
I do. Just really quickly, I'm drinking Dan's favorite pumpkin beer, the Harpoon Dunkin' Pumpkin. He loves pumpkin beer.
Funny story on those. I actually gave those away in a White Elephant last Friday.
Oh, why would you do that? Come on.
Because I'm not going
this
to drink
this is really
them.
Good. Whatever. So my first question is, what is the story with your beer called Redheaded Senator? Apparently this one got all the way to the Capitol for the inauguration.
Yeah.
And I know you're tell real, us, you're, tell you're, us, you're, tell you're, us the story behind the beer. And then how did it come up with a double red IPA, and then tell us the story, how it got to the Capitol building.
So the beer itself, the way my approach to almost anything is that I've ever been involved in, any hobby that I get into, I get obsessive about it. I soak up any bit of information that I can, whether it's podcasts or books or you name it. So I began to listen to the Brewing Network stuff when I was commuting. I was driving up back and forth to Lansing every day. And the Brewing Network podcast was out there. That was my introduction to Jamil Zainashef, who is a home brewer that published several books. At that time, he was the only home brewer to have won a gold medal in the national homebrew competition in every category that the BJCP recognized. So he was pretty highly renowned. And on his show, he talked about a beer that was one of his favorite recipes that he did at home, which was a West Coast red IPA that was called Evil Twin. He went on to open a brewery out there called Heretic that had that as a beer there. So the very first time I ever brewed this was basically a clone recipe as a home brewer of Evil Twin. And I went on to make that into an Imperial IPA, which again, I evolved over time with changes to base malt, changes to Belgian yeast, changes to the types of hops I was really excited about. And eventually I had this really big hoppy red beer that I thought was kind of unlike anything I'd had around here. I absolutely loved it. Every time I brewed as a home brewer, my family members and friends waited for me to get another batch done because they couldn't wait to come over and have it. So that was kind of the backstory of the beer itself. Leading up to opening, I'd always had that one written into the business plan that we were going to do, even before it was going to the Belgian angle, and even afterwards. I'm like, this beer is going to stay around. I really like it. As we were ramping up towards open, we had kind of a chance encounter through getting involved in a lot of the local, you know, economic development and stuff like that, and trying to have as many conversations as we can. We ended up in a room at a talk with Debbie Stabenow. Our senator, who has done a lot over the years in support of Michigan farms and specifically hops growers in the state. So she's kind of been an indirect supporter of the craft beer industry. So we had a little chance to kind of tell her what we were doing in Albion. And at the end of the brief Q&A, you know, we said, hey, we're going to be open in a few months. You should come on back and celebrate our grand opening. And she goes, well, get your information to my staffer and, you know, we'll see what we can make happen. And one of my partners at the time says, if you come, we'll name a beer after you. And her reply was, well, if you do that, I'll come for sure. And we, you know, kind of chuckled and turned around. We're walking out. And one of my partners leaned over and said, let's call it Redheaded Senator. And I was like, I've got a big red beard that needs a name. I'm like, that's perfect. Like, and then he's like, no, don't do that for real. You know, you might get us into trouble. They might be a little pissed about that. It's like, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or an insult, depending on how you read into it. But I love the name and it stuck and we opened with it. And sure enough, only within the week of opening, we got a call from their staffer, which I was a little nervous about. I didn't know if they were going to be upset or happy, but they thought it was awesome. And they brought the senator and her whole crew to the brewery our first week of opening, and they had dinner and had a pint of Redheaded Senator and were super friendly and were very appreciative and very supportive. And then, yeah, fast forward to the end of 2019, out of nowhere, I get a call again from Stabenow's office, which I was unexpected to say the least. And somebody says, hey, we'd like to buy a keg of Redheaded Senator. Stabenow was reelected and we want to take it down to the inauguration party in DC. So I said, okay. And they came by to pick it up along with an invitation and invited myself, my wife, Jenny, was doing marketing for us and PR stuff for us, and my partner, Charles, and invited us to come to the inauguration in DC. So we got to go to this, they were doing a Michigan celebration at the Senate building. And there were brands like Faygo and Zingerman's, you know, represented. And then our tiny little brewery in the corner with Redheaded Senator on tap and, in the Senate office, it was a pretty surreal experience and definitely not planned. There was no political motivations or aspirations. It was just a weird coincidence of events that landed us in Washington, D.C. at an inauguration. That was kind of a surreal experience.
And still brewing it to this day.
Still very popular. Every time it comes back around, we have people clamoring for months leading up to its release about when it's going to be back.
But I think if you can get a public figure like that on board with naming something after them and they're on board with it, I say go for it, because people are going to be attracted to that. I feel like people are attracted to that kind of stuff.
It was wild.
Oh, I would imagine so, especially standing in the Capitol building. Let's switch gears. Something a little bit more current, kind of perusing on your Facebook page. Yeah. Talk to us about the M. Berry Sour series. You just released something brand spanking new. And here's the name. It's called Electric Sex Pants. Talk to us about the Sour series, and then talk to us about this new sour that you guys just put out. Well, and Gary, oh, there it is, right there.
Yeah, color. I know the listeners can't see it, but it's a
it's pretty good looking. If you can catch the video somewhere, guys, I highly suggest it, or check it out on their Facebook
page. If you are listening via the podcast, of course, you can go to our website, youtube.com/betteronDraft, and watch the video of all of our podcasts since we've started. I think since episode 100, we have videos all the way back to there. So go check that out. But now you can go continue.
Good segue. I like it. I you know, kettle sours are still a little bit newer for me, but I've had a lot of fun experimenting with them. In the more Belgian tradition, you know, you got the more, you know, Fjorder traditional aged beers, but in a small brew house, I don't have good separation, and I don't want to introduce those wild organisms into the space that we have. So kettle sours are a good way to play around with some of those flavors without without having a high degree of risk of cross-contamination with other beers. So the M. Berry series, my kind of through you know, conversations the way they happen, we discovered that my partner and I were both huge fans of Matt Berry. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with him. He's a British comedian. He kind of made a big splash in the IT crowd, if you've ever seen that show. He's got a number of different shows that are very entertaining. More currently, he was in the What We Do in the Shadows on Hulu. He's the vampire Laszlo. So we kind of got to these conversations, and it started with Electric Sex Pants, because one of his big introductions, he plays this kind of manager CEO who gets in trouble for harassment, and he's forced to wear some device that electrocutes him anytime he becomes aroused by anything. And the big joke is that he is aroused by everything, so they're just going off constantly in the episode, and it's pretty funny. But it culminates with him stopping and just saying, "God damn these electric sex pants," and it's a hysterical delivery. And it was a very obscure reference that somehow my partner and I both understood when it came around. So we decided to do the series of beers inspired by some of his weird quotes or movies or shows. Starting with Electric Sex Pants. So we do a full batch base sour. It's a kettled sour beer. I use yogurt for my lactobacillus. We take the whole seven barrels and we split it. So we finish the fermentation into separate smaller fermenters, or partially filled fermenters, to be able to ferment different fruits or different flavors to get different characters in sort of sub batches, if you will. So we've done three of them in total. This year we narrowed it down to two because we liked them a little better and we wanted to do a little bigger batch of the two that we did. So Electric Sex Pants has a huge dose of blackberries. And then we add this butterfly pea flower, which creates a very intense blue purple color if you just steep it in water, and adds a lot to the color of the beer. So you get a really fruity, really tart, very aromatic and pretty purplish red beer out of this current one. We just finished out the first one we did this year was Jackie Daytona, which comes from the What We Do in the Shadows reference from him, where he's a vampire, and that one's done with blood oranges. We actually use whole Michigan tart cherries and a little bit of habanero in that beer to kind of create this tart and slightly warm kettle sour with that one. But yeah, this one just tapped today, so it'll be on probably through January, I would guess, into early February. So we'll have it around here for a little bit. But it's been hugely popular in the past when we brewed it, and I expect the sour fans who keep an eye out for these things are going to be very excited to see this one back on tap.
All right, one last question. I come to your brewery and I'm going to get food. What would you recommend between these two, the Reuben poutine or the buffalo chicken poutine? Because I've seen just poutine, but I've never seen those two takes on a poutine dish. What's your favorite between the two?
Ironically, the Reuben and the buffalo chicken sandwich are two of my favorite sandwiches on our menus. That makes it a tough call, but I'd probably get the buffalo. I'm a huge fan of spicy anything, so I tend to lean towards that a little bit. We started sort of the creative poutine just out of the fact that, again, we hand cut our own fries, and we have really, really good fries, and we had a great poutine, and we kind of just played around with it. We discovered a national French fry day where we could do, we wanted to push different ways to do it. And it was kind of just a joke at first of like, well, let's throw these sandwich toppings or those sandwich toppings on the poutine. But they were so good. Like we gotta just offer this as an option. They've kind of stuck, and they're fantastic. If you're really lucky, when the national fry day or some of our special events go around, we've done what we call the black tie poutine. And that is a bit of our fries with aged shaved parm, truffle oil, and we do a full Iron Lion quad braised beef rib on top of it that you kind of pull apart with a fork, and it is, and then there's like a beef au jus that cooks in that gets drizzled over all of it, and that is a truly phenomenal dish when it comes back around.
All right,
got my attention.
it's awesome. The big, just Fred Flintstone rib bone on the top of the pile of fries.
Turns I like head. All of gosh. The words you just said. All of them.
There's some crispy haystack onions on top of all of that too to kind of finish gosh. It off. And yeah, one of them will get carried out to a table, and then five more get ordered. Because once people see it, it's just like whatever that is.
I'll want whatever they're having over there.
Exactly.
Oh man. All right, I am going to turn it over to Ken.
Well, thank you so much, Ben, for joining us this evening. We appreciate it. As we end every show, we're going to go through the final questions, ask something a little bit more fun and exciting to kind of send us off on a good note, and then give you the opportunity to tell us where we can get delicious Albion beer. So starting with Wendy. Wendy, what is your final question for Ben here?
As most people know, I'm a big fan of travel. So what is it that will bring... What is it that people should come to visit your brewery for?
Music. Throw a complete curveball. We do live music every Monday, and we have great food and great beer there all the time. But our music events, we've been fortunate to get some really top caliber acts. We get performers that I don't even understand how we're lucky enough to get some of these people in our room. So
they've got Iron Maiden next week.
yeah. our normal weekend then. Monday night we actually have a phenomenal jazz vocalist by the name of Olivia Van Goor. She's playing with a keyboard and upright bass player, and she just released a Christmas album. And if you like the sort of like American standard jazz, the old Sinatra type stuff, she is as good as you're going to see at a much higher ticket price. For free, and you can have some great food and beer while you're there.
Fantastic.
Daniel.
All right. What is one style of beer you haven't had a chance to make yet that you want to have at the brewery?
I would love to get the chance to do some real, true traditional sour. Flanders Red. I think, Jolly Pumpkins La Roja is one of my absolute favorite beers anywhere. I love it. Same with, I just drew a complete blank on the other one. The Grand Cru, Rodenbach Grand Cru, another traditional Belgian, red. Like I said, one of these days I'll have a designated separate space where I can experiment with some of that stuff. But until we do, we won't pull it in there. But I would love to get a chance to kind of experiment with some of that stuff.
Nicholas.
All right. You have to choose between one of the three. Pabst Blue Ribbon, Blue Can Stroh's, or Hams. Which one are you picking that you're drinking this weekend and why?
Probably Hams.
Oh, okay.
I like that choice.
I know you would, Daniel. Why Hams?
Why is a lot tougher. I think it's one of those college nostalgia things where right place, right time. I had a few of them and it was a fun night then. So sure. Let's do it again.
That works.
All right, my final question for you. Very, very simple. You're having, everyone's having their Christmas party upcoming. And usually when you have a Christmas party or something like that, a holiday party, there's types of events and games. What is the one game you think you could beat your entire staff at? It could be a drinking game like Flip Cup. It could be a drinking sport like billiards or darts. What is the one game you think you could just wipe the floor with your entire staff on?
I think I could probably take him. I don't think there's anybody on my staff that could take me in billiards and pool. It's been a while since I played, but I'm a pretty good pool player, and unless somebody has a secret that they've really been holding out on me, I could probably take them.
What's your game of choice? 8-ball or 9-ball?
Traditionally, it was 8-ball. I honestly really enjoy both. I have more experience competitively with 8-ball, but it's been some years.
All right, that is going to do it. Albion Malleable Brewing over in Albion, Michigan. Where can they find you online, and where can they find you for your beer?
Online, we are on Facebook at Malleable, Instagram at Albion Malleable. AlbionMalleable.com is our website. We'll probably direct you to most of those things. Our beer is primarily in our tap room, although we are on tap at a handful of locations around the region. Cascarelli is a homer. I'm not going to remember those lists off the top of my head. We just put some stuff on at Bill's Tap House down in Coldwater, a little spinoff of the steakhouse they have there at the golf course. They've actually got our full Iron Lion series down there right now. We did a really cool tap takeover with them. So they got the blonde, double, triple, and bourbon quad on hand, if you can make it down there.
Wait, where was that?
Bill's Tap House in Coldwater.
All right.
I don't know if they're running them all at the same time, but they have them all.
I'm going to have to make some phone calls.
keep an eye out. We're on at our Iron Lion Blonde is on at a really nice French bistro in downtown Detroit called the Statler. So that's you want a great food and beer pairing, go try some really high end French cuisine with one of our Iron Lion Blondes at the Statler.
Nice.
That is going to do it. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Of course, go check out their website. You can do igloo reservations. They do have outdoor igloos that you can go and reserve for 2 hours. Seats 6 to 10 people, apparently, on their website. 10 uncomfortably, as it says. But go check it out. Get a reservation. This place is always bumping. Great beer, great food. We appreciate you joining. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thank you, Wendy.